All right, I'd like to call to order the regular session of the Water Utility Committee meeting at January 8th at 5:05. Can we get a roll call?
Vice Chair Alan Forrest. Here. Commissioner Patricia Olson. Here. Commissioner Niranjan Vesio. Here. Commissioner David Atler. Here. Commissioner Kay Lantel. Here. Commissioner Tom Merrick. Here. And Chair Greg Hitt.
All right, thank you. Let the record show we have a quorum. Call to the audience. Any speaker cards or on file? No. All right. With that, we'll move into the regular session. Review and approval of the November 13th, 2023 regular session meeting minutes. Any comments or questions or changes?
Yeah, I have. It's just a real minor little clarification, but on item three, it said Vice Chair Alan Forrest asked a question regarding wedging of well E2. That's swedging with a S. Sorry, I should have made that clear.
All right, any other comments or questions or changes? If not, I'll entertain a motion with the requested amendment.
I move approval with changes of the minutes.
Second?
I'll second that.
All right. All members in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right. Minutes pass. Item number two, nomination and election of the chair or commission chair effective January 9th, 2024. I'll entertain a motion.
I would move to nominate Alan Forrest as our new chair.
There's a second? I'll second. Oh. Alter. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Let the motion pass. Congratulations on the chair. Starting tomorrow. Item number three, nomination and election of the commission vice chair effective January 9th, 2024. I'll entertain a motion.
I'd like to nominate Niranjan Vesio.
I'll second.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Hearing none, the motion passes. Congratulations.
Chair Hitt, I'd like to thank our tomorrow new chair, Alan Forrest. He was our vice chair, and we appreciate you filling the role as vice chair and then stepping up to being chair, so thank you very much. Mr. Commissioner Vesio, thank you for stepping up to being the vice chair. It'd be nice to see you there. I'd like to thank Greg for being Commissioner Hitt or Chair Hitt for being the chair this last year. You did a great job. So thank you for doing that for us. So we appreciate you. And Alan, thank you for being vice chair. So thank you, everybody, and thank you for the nominations.
All right. Thank you. Item number four, update and discussion on possible action on the 2023 Water Utility Commission work plan. Peter.
Thank you, Chair Hitt. So, you know, every year we put together, it's a working work plan. And let's see, can I scroll through? There we go. So, you know, this is a working work plan. At any time we can add items. Sometimes we move items forward or push items back. But, you know, looking at the next couple months, we need to start working after today. You know, we're going to work on rates, but then after that, we need to start working on our annual report. We're going to do that in February and March. You know, so just look at the items that we have here. I'll be discussing a little bit later this Arizona Growing Water Smart Retreat. We're going to provide an update and discussion on that. We're going to talk about the condition of our aquifer. We're going to be updating the commission on our Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System project. Of course, we're going to continue providing quarterly reports with respect to capital improvement projects, financials, water operations, water resources. Planning a guest speaker in May. I have a plan for someone from CAP to give us some updates on what's going on with respect to the Colorado River. But then if that falls through, I'll have a field trip planned. last year, last couple of years, we've been canceling our June and July meeting. If, you know, we don't have any pressing work items to work through, we'd like to request the commission for those 2 months off for June and July. And then moving into August, we have someone from water quality come speak to the commission about how we're doing with respect to water quality. I like to have a field trip every year for the commission. So think about that. That'll be, we're planning on September. Haven't really nailed down anything yet for that field trip, but if the commissioners have something that they'd like to see, that'd be great. Actually, I did have an idea. I was actually thinking of giving a tour of our water system. In the past, we've given the commission tours of Tucson Water's Central Avra Valley Storage and Recovery Project. Last year, we went to Tres Rios Reclamation Facility. The year before that, we went to Kai Farms and saw one of our groundwater savings facilities there. So, you know, we're thinking, or I was thinking in September, we should be well underway with the partnered portions of the NWRDS, as well as completed with the components of the independent portion, as well as working on other independent portions. So if nobody has any great ideas, I think we might do a tour of our projects that we have going on and let the commission see how we operate our water utility. But let me know what you think. And then, of course, as you know, here we go in October, November, again, it's time for water rates. So we'll start discussing our water rates analysis schedule, updates on our Northwest Recharge Recovery Delivery System, and quarterly updates. So this is just kind of my work plan. If you can't think of any changes we'd want to make tonight, send me an email. Of course, at any time before this meeting's over, you can always put future agenda items on the agenda. So this is the work plan I've come up with, and I'm open for any discussion or comments on the work plan. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. I don't. This all looks great to me, and looks very familiar. But you mentioned the September 9th. The idea of doing a Oro Valley water system, I think, is tremendous. It's been a while since I've seen, you know, what you guys have been doing out here. So.
All right. Well, thank you for that comment. Thank you. Well, this gets after, I think, Commissioner Vestio was wanting to make a comment.
Thank you, Director Abraham. Hey, I've heard some discussions just in sideline conversations with our town manager, and I think it was Council Member Josh Nicholson, that perhaps there's some dialogue starting between the municipalities here for direct portable reuse, like complete recycling of water. Is that something that can be talked about here? Any long-term plans?
Love it. Yeah, let's add that. In fact, that is a conversation I was having with some of our water colleagues at the Colorado River Water Users Association conference we had in December. So definitely, I'll add that. You know, to me, I think here it looks a little thin in March. So I might add that into March, just kind of discuss water reuse and what my thoughts are on that and how we might want to proceed with exploring that. Great additional. Thank you. Any other comments with respect to the work plan at this time?
If not, I'll entertain it because there's an action, so you want a motion to approve?
Yes, please.
Right? Okay. With the amendment that we add reclaimed water, potable reuse discussion, targeted, tentatively targeted for the March 11th meeting. If anyone wants to make a motion?
Yes. Move approval of the work plan as changed, amended.
I'll second that.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposition? All right, hearing none, passes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, item number five, update and discussion on the capital improvement projects. Lee.
Thank you. Good evening, Commissioner.
You got to put this thing right in your face.
Oh, okay. Is that better? Okay.
Okay, I'll get started on our CIP. You're gonna notice that a lot of what we're gonna discuss this evening is similar to what we discussed in our previous presentation as it relates to CIP. And that's just because we're working through the procurement process now. We've done a lot of the design. On well E2, we've proceeded with a change order to do the sleeve. If you recall, in our previous meeting, we had gone in there and video logged it, and we noticed that we had some holes in the casing, essentially, and so we had some large rocks falling in. So it was determined that we needed to just salvage this, and so as a result of that, we've decided to go with the sleeving, and so we've moved forward with that. Our contractor has now started the application process through ADWR, so that's moving forward. So we're hoping in the next month and a half to have everything hopefully back in service, probably 2 months at the longest. We're hoping to get it all done before the end of winter for our peak demand starts. So Nokomis Sky, this is one of our new wells, and you've seen this one for several years. But now the good news is we've started, we've issued a contract for the portion of the well that's going to be from the facility wall going out to connect to the system. So that discharge line is going to start construction here shortly, as well as the power. So that was our biggest delay when it came to partnering with the private property owner who was going to bring in power from First Avenue. And so now that's starting to take place, and so we'll have that. We're anticipating having that electrical line and discharge piping done here probably in a month and a half. So we're going to start to see a lot more construction on our CIPs, which is kind of what we like to see, right? You know, we go from the design, see it on paper, it looks nice, now we're going to construction. So that's kind of what the... what it's all about for us. Here's steam pump well. Now, so steam pump is the design is 100% complete. Our telemetry, our SCADA, everything's design is complete. We're going to, when we get ready to bid this out, we'll bid it out with the wall in mind, but probably not an actual final design, just because we're still working through the final aesthetic, what it's going to look like with the Historical Society, the Historical Commission here in the town. Palisades, our contractor started mobilizing. Our pipe is on site. We're hoping to do some clearing and grubbing here in the next week, or this week, actually, and go get going probably by next week, start digging and putting some pipe in the ground. And they're going to start from the shadow, from Silver Hawk, and work their way towards Catalina Shadows. And the only reason for that delay is our contractor was delayed on a job on with our neighboring water utility to the south, the big guys there. So here's our Countryside. The good news here is that we had a pre-bid meeting this week. Today's Monday. I'm sorry, last week. Again, my day's confused here. So we had a pre-bid last week. We had a lot of good questions. We had five of our JOCs. We're putting it out to all our JOCs, so we're looking to get bids on that here shortly. Probably mid, I'm hoping to get them. I gave them a little extra time because I did set it to them before the holidays. So I'm going to give them a little extra time to try to get it to us by mid-January. I think mid-January. I pushed it back to the 23rd, I think, is where it's at. So hopefully we'll get those bids in and get going on that. And that's going to be important primarily because Pima County is going to be doing a mill and overlay right in front of us. And so we want to try to get in there before a moratorium starts or something. So that's, we're moving forward on that. And hopefully those numbers come in at close to engineer's estimate. Here we have Rancho Vistoso. So this is another one. I think in the previous meeting we had discussed that we had put that out to bid. And so we have a contractor now. I'm sorry, it was not out to bid. It was already in design. And so that contractor has started doing the demo. So that site is offline now. The demolition started last week, and power was cut, potholing, things like that. And so the foundation for the existing booster pumps is currently being demolished. And I think I was told by my inspector that that probably won't be there tomorrow. So that's good news. So that's moving along nice, and we're hoping to get that one up and going here in the next, probably before April. And that's just because our demand. Right, Dave?
What was that?
Right before our peak demand starts.
Okay.
So that's where we're at there. Big Wash. So Big Wash will probably take place. The actual construction, looking at March. And that's just for the interior coating. We'd initially discussed doing the adjacent reservoir, but we don't think we're going to have time this fiscal year, so which is fine because it's not in horrible shape, and so we'll at least get the one that's priority, which is our 200,000 gallon reservoir, get that completed and back up and running and into service. So the La Cañada two zone booster, this is our E to F and E to G zone. This is a big one for us. This one, the contractor has been given their notice to proceed for January 22nd, so that's the week after next, I think. Yeah. So they'll get going on that. That contractor, we spoke to them. They've been pre-purchasing some of the materials so that they can get kind of a head start on that, so that once it comes time, they don't mobilize and then stop and then go and stop and go, because we have some long lead time items on this project. So that's going to be a lot exciting. So we're going to have a lot of construction going on this year. And as you know, the independent booster at Shannon Road, north of Naranja, that's ongoing. And I have a little video. The video's a little outdated, but as we go through it, I can kind of explain, you know, where we're at today. And I have some photos here that show kind of a little bit more of the progress. So the roof is on, the interior coating's being completed. The exterior coating's not done yet. It's just a primer, and our booster pad is complete. You can see the header there laying on the ground, and or part of it. And our perimeter wall there. That photo to the right, our perimeter wall's going up. We can see the rack for the electrical power connection, TEP's pad there for the transformer, and so. That was kind of a big deal. We got ahead of that, and we got that easement because TEP required an easement separate from ours. So that was acquired fairly quickly through the state Arizona State Land, Arizona State Trust Land Department, right? And so that's done, and so this one's moving along pretty fast, and I think we're slightly ahead of schedule. So that's good news. And then the other part of that, too, what I'll share is that our discharge line going to our E-zone, going to Naranja, which is about 2,200 linear feet of 16-inch on the – I don't know if this one has a point. Oh, okay. So here we're going to have two lines coming in here, and we've actually started the process of that contractor to do what we call our D-zone. This is going to be our D-zone water for our blending line coming in. And then we're going to have our discharge line going into our E-zone line, going out to down Shannon, and then connecting to Naranja. And so that way we'll have source water. So when our pumps are
in place. And then when you need to, you can.
Oh, okay.
Oh, can Brian, you can clear it? Okay, thank you.
You got the magic. Yeah, thank you, Brian. So that here, I think we're looking at, and our contractor, We're still working through the PO, but our contractor is confident that they'll be able to have that material, our ductile iron pipe, 16-inch. Both our blending line and our discharge line are both going to be 16-inch. They're confident that they could have that here probably within the next month and a half and get going. And so that's going to be critical for us for this booster site so that we can start once the time is ready, when the site is ready, we'll be able to start using those pumps, and that's going to be important for us from a warranty standpoint, so that we make sure that we're, you know, that, hey, everything's operational, and it's and that warranty period starts, as you know, when we install it, and our contractor has that two-year warranty. So is this the video, or do I hit next? All right. Okay, there you go. Yeah, so we got a little drone. You can kind of see. So you can see it's a little outdated because the wall's starting to go in, the wall footer's in. They're probably about two-thirds of the way through. The south side doesn't have, I think the footer's just going in now on the south end, but the riprap, they have placed riprap that's going in, that's already placed on the north end, the west end, and then the south end. It's probably 90% in. So I'm hoping to have another video maybe at the next commission meeting to present to you. So it's really nice, and maybe like Peter mentioned, that might be a really good site to visit. And that's what I have. Thank you. Any questions? Oh, no, I got one more. I'm sorry. the partnered one. So we've got the partnered one. We're in discussions right now with so that contractor that contract is we've selected the contractor. So the partners Oro Valley, Marana, and Metro Water are in discussions with our contractor now on looking at potential cost reductions for this project, you know, because it was over what we had initially anticipated. So we're working through that and looking at areas where we might potentially be able to save some money. And I think that's it. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Lee? One?
Yeah. Thanks for the report, Mr. Jacobs.
Thank you.
So I've just learned from our chairman that what JOC meant.
Job order contract.
So my question is, how many contractors do you have contracted right now? And
so, and I'm not a procurement officer, so don't hold me to this. But so I think the town has a limit of $1 million that they can use for our job order contractors, our jocks. We have jocks, the water utility. We have a jock. We have five jocks, and we get the maximum number of jocks that the state statute allows us to acquire. And so we go out for a request for qualifications, and so we get submittals, and we've been pretty successful, I would think, having good contractors submit, and we put a committee together. Usually we'll have a neighboring a utility, and we'll have a contractor on board, and then maybe another engineer from the town. So it's usually made up of three folks that are voting members, and then we evaluate those qualifications based on our needs and the projects that we anticipate having. And so once we evaluate them, we vote, and procurement allows us to pick a maximum of five contractors. So in the water utility, we have five distribution, what we call distribution contractors, and they primarily deal with our water lines, the underground work, and then we have facility contractors that we have that deal with, you know, above ground sites like reservoirs, booster sites, wells, and those types of facilities. And we also have five. Some of them overlap, we've got some really good contractors. So what we do, and the purpose of this is to it helps us because we know the contractors a lot of times. We know the quality of the work that they do. We're familiar with it, you know, whether it was in our previous lives at another utility or our work here. It gives us that ability to either directly select a contractor to do a job or to put it out competitively to the bid. And we can put it out to two, three, or four, or five, or all five, right? Or just select one, just say, here, you know, we have this contract, you know, we can negotiate a price and talk about that. But for the most part, you know, it gives us that ability because of the, a lot of times you can get contractors that you just know nothing about, right? And it can go sideways fast. And so, and those are usually on the big jobs. We'll put those out to bid. So like our, let's say, on our transmission main, when we go from our partnered booster site to this site here at Shannon Road, we're going to put that out to bid just because our engineer's estimate is well over $1 million that we anticipate. So, and that's exactly what we did on the previous one as well. So for the partnered portion.
Just one follow-up question. So you have a number of contractors. You mentioned five below, five for above-ground stuff. But after you hired the contractors, you have the discretion of giving job orders to different ones based on your judgment of which one would perform?
Correct. Yeah, and based on the qualifications, you know, so we, you know, a lot of times, let's say we have a contractor that we know that does HP tanks, right? And that's something we do, you know, rather than hiring a contractor like Contractor B who doesn't do it, but they're going to hire Contractor A who we can go directly to, or they may hire somebody out of town. And in this case, we're limited on certain projects that we do on the types of locally, the types of contractors that we have available to us, if that makes sense.
All right, no other questions?
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Item number 6, update and discussion on water utility financials. Mary?
Do I do anything? Oh, no, it's okay. Okay, this is an update on the financials, water utility financials through December 31st, 2023. So, so all revenues are projected to meet budget through the fiscal year. Potable water sales are at 8.1. Reclaimed water sales are at 988,000. Groundwater preservation fees are at 1.4. Service fees are at 426,000. So total revenues at the end of December are at 10,960,417. So we're projecting that we're going to meet budget of $19,260,500. As far as expenses, personnel, we're projecting that we're going to be below budget due to vacancy savings at $1.7 million. O&M, we're at $4.7 million, and that's projected to meet budget. Capital is at $297,000. And that's projected to meet budget. Debt service, we made our first payment, or debt service payment on July 1st of $3.6 million. So total expenses through December are $10,306,375. And we're projecting to be below budget at the end of the fiscal year. New meters installed through December 92. Our customer base is at 21,392. Our WaterSmart registered accounts are at 7,400. And our customer portal is at 9,500 users. And if anyone has any questions?
Thank you. Any questions for Mary?
Forgive me once again, I do have a question.
Oh, okay.
So from the private sector side, whenever we're meeting budget with vacancy savings, you know, the boss asks, well, can you keep that the way it is? Are you under any pressure not to fill those things since you're half the year through and you're meeting budget?
Peter will probably.
I'm not used, there we go. It's at this point I'm used to saying, Mr. Mayor, Commissioner Vecchio. So, you know,
I'd be happy to withdraw the question.
when we're fully staffed, I think we have FTEs of what, 41.5, I think?
40.5.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, typically, you know, just due to retirements or, you know, just attrition, we're usually down one or two staff at any given time. And another thing we do that I've started and my senior management team has embraced and it's done an excellent job with is as we say, if someone resigns or retires, It's very rarely that we'll just knee-jerk react, fill a position. So we'll, you know, David right now, I think he is, are you down one person or two people?
Two
people. Is we look at how does the operation run if you're down that person. You know, we've implemented a lot of technology made us more efficient. In fact, this is something Mary's doing even in her area with the implementation of SpryPoint is, you know, possibly, you know, if someone resigns in customer service, do we need to fill that position? Now, that doesn't mean we give the position back, because a lot of times we find we need a person somewhere else. So we're always reevaluating, you know, our staffing levels, and do we have the right people in the right places doing the right thing? You know, that's just trying to be as efficient as possible. My overreaching goal is during the length of my career here, I don't plan on adding any more staff, but just making the operation more efficient. But at any given time, we have one or two vacancies, and we're constantly evaluating what are those vacancies, how can they be at best be filled, and where. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? No? All right, thank you. Item number 7, update and discussion on water operations activities. David.
We're done. Oh. There we go. Hey, good evening and happy new year again. Good to see everybody. Tonight I'm going to give you a little update on the water operations activities. This time I kind of changed it up a little bit and just want to do a short presentation, give a couple of major stats that we did over the calendar year. Water production for our 46 active facilities, reservoirs. Our staff did inspections in our cartograph. Cartograph's our asset management program where we monitor what they do. They can list in any repairs or anything that's out of the ordinary. We actually logged in 3,228 inspections for the 48 active facilities. In our total groundwater produced at just out of the wells, we were at 1.5 million gallons, or 4,689 feet. This does not include the cap water coming in. This is just what we pulled out, and it's just for the physical year. It's not the calendar year. And for that, we treated the water with a little bit of chlorine with 12.5% sodium hypochlorite, and we actually brought in about 17,000 gallons. For our water control systems, they were able to get out to all 17 reservoirs and calibrate all the level sensors on there so our SCADA system can read the levels correctly. They also started their preventative maintenance of the facility control panels and PLC panels. Were about 20%, and I tried to count how many we had, but the number's too large because every site's got multiple of them. Do we need to evacuate? My phone?
Yeah.
I turned it off.
It is off now.
Did you break it? Sorry about that. So anyways, when they get in these control panels, it's the panel on the right there. You can see that's got the starter controls, the fuses, and everything. They go in and they actually straighten up all of the wiring in there, check all the connections, make sure they're tight, check all the fuses, make sure that the connections are good. And then in the PLC panels, they do the same thing. They'll go in there and check everything, change any relays that are weak. For water distribution, again, where you take care of 375 miles of potable water mains. In 2023, we had five. I hated to use the word major, but that minors like service line leaks. So any mainline break where we got to dig in the road's kind of major. So we actually did five of those, which is pretty good, not bad. Also in water distribution, we have 2,394 fire hydrants. They actually had to go out and repair or replace 39 hydrants. Actually, one of them was in Countryside, got hit by a car and taken out. Golder Ranch and Northwest Fire, when they're out testing fire hydrants, they let us know which ones are bad. So we monitor on their system so we can keep up on them, keep them operable. We have 8,605 mainline system valves. Again, you guys have heard about our valve exercising program. We did 1,447 that we logged in Cartograph again. Our goal is 2,868 to keep us on about a third, about every 3 years. We fell a little bit short. Part of that was due to me pulling the valve truck off for a month to go do some other work. Hopefully, we make up those numbers this next year. And also in water distribution, we have 36 pressure-reducing valve stations. So they do quarterly inspections. They're testing upstream, downstream pressures, making sure everything's working correctly. We logged in 172 inspections in Cartograph for the year. And then air relief valves, I don't know if anybody's familiar with those, are in different parts of the system. If we have a dip or a high spot in the system to get the air out, and there's thousands of them. So they actually went out and did 65 replacements or repairs on those. For water meter operations, again, we're over 21,000 metered service connections with advanced meter infrastructure technology. They put in 157 new meter installs, and that's all different sizes. You can see there's a larger meter there that they're doing. We replaced 1,183 meters due to them getting bad or warranty replacements, and also 799 smart meters. The meter operations group, they work closely with customer service, so they get all of the customer service orders. We did 26,858 service orders for that count. That's a big number. And then we also do all of the utility locates, and sometimes known as blue stakes. We actually received 9,970 requests to do that. We had to take care of a lot of paint going on the road. And then for water quality, utility received 2,661 analytical results for required water sampling. So each year the utility collects hundreds of samples from 15 points of entry sites, which includes groundwater wells, reservoirs, pumping stations, CAP wheeling stations. So the samples include the revised total coliform rule, disinfectant byproducts, nitrates. We do baseline and cap water quality parameters for chlorine, free and total. We look at temperature. We look at total dissolved solids, conductivity, and hardness. And that's both done in the lab and in field analysis. And you can see one of our techs there with their field kit. It's pretty intensive. The water quality also takes care of our backflow cross-connection program. So they manage 1,438 backflows throughout the town, privately owned and town-owned. So they make sure that they get tested every year, repaired, and they're in good working order. So our staff tested and repaired 223 that the town owned. We changed some of them out, changing some of the older ones out to meet some of the older lead rules that came in 2014. And that's all I got.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions for David? You have one?
Yeah. I apologize, David, because I think I've asked you this before, but I can't remember.
I have that problem too.
Yeah. I was just curious what your target, you know, chlorine residuals are in the system.
We try to keep coming out the source about 0.8, but we want to keep no less than a 0.25 in the ends of the system. So it's going to be, you know, depending how far out it travels. But that's our goal when we do dead end line flushing.
Yeah, and I think you may have had it in there, but you're doing really good on your testing for coliform and all that. So yeah, it's working.
I should throw that in there.
Doing,
that
right?
We have, but I don't like to jinx us. But we don't have any notice of violations or notice of corrections from ADQ. So knock on wood. Everybody knock on
good
wood.
Good job.
All right. Thank you. Item number 8, update and discussion on water resource usage. Peter.
Thank you very much, Chair Hitt. You know, as I look at the work that the senior management team does with respect to capital and finances and water operations, I can't help but wonder what Alan thinks of the water utility he helped start. You know, it's 27 years old, and it's really come a long ways. I hope you're proud of the work we've built on top of the work you've done.
Definitely, and you guys have taken it, you know, to a whole nother level, especially the maintenance and, all of that. I mean, we were scrambling to try to play catch up all the time, but it sounds like now you've kind of caught up and you're able to keep things in front of you. From my perspective, it's a great system.
Yeah. No, though, thanks for the work you did early on to giving us the resources to be successful. So. With that, let's talk about some of those water resources. So what I'm showing you here, this reflects a calendar year's worth of water resource usage. This is one of the areas where Mary and I are always pulling our hair out, because I'm a water resource guy and an engineer. I think of January through December as a year. Mary's a finance person. She thinks of July through June as a year. So this is the end of my calendar year with respect to water resource usage. So we ended 2023 in good shape. We were our fifth lowest usage since 2000, and total usage since 2002. Last year, we were at our second lowest usage, which we'll talk about that when we talk about our water rates. That last year's lowest usage really had a revenue impact for us. But here for 2023, we delivered or produced a little over 1,800 acre feet of reclaimed water. As you know, most of that goes to turf irrigation for golf courses, Naranja Park. We have an elementary school and a couple hydrants that we use for street sweeping and construction purposes. Our CAP Wheeling, it was just under 2,400 acre-foot this calendar year. Our agreement with Tucson Water allows us to wheel up to 2,600 acre-feet a year, so we try and use every bit of that as much as possible. This year, we did have one of our wheeling stations. We had to take them out of service, I think it was for close to a month, because Tucson Water was doing some work on their system, and they asked us to shut that down for about a month. So, but a pretty good year for delivering our portion of our CAP allocation. And probably most importantly, looking at our groundwater production, just under 4,500 acre feet a year. To me, success with respect to groundwater pumping is anything under 5,000 acre feet a year is good. We were able to do that for the first time, or the first time since we've gone over since 2017, and we've been able to stay below that. So that's with respect to our Oro Valley, our main service area. Looking at countryside, here again, we have a CAP wheeling station there. We delivered just a little over 200 acre feet last year, and we saw reduced groundwater, one of the lowest years of groundwater pumping, if not the lowest year of groundwater pumping, at 409 acre feet. So I'm really excited to see also what happens with our wells at Countryside when we finish that wheeling station upgrade. We have seen some recovery in the two wells that serve that area, but I think when we triple our wheeling capacity there, I hope to really see some recovery there, just as long as our neighboring groundwater pumpers don't undo all of our hard work and pump more. But stay tuned. But a successful year with respect to water resource usage. You know, it's amazing. I look at this trend, and our pot, we add connections every day, and yet we're just, we're holding steady. I mean, I don't see a reverse in this trend yet, and that's just a real testament to this community's water conservation ethic and the body of work that you folks do. So. Any questions with respect to our water resource utilization in Oro Valley and Countryside?
I have just one. I am wondering, I think this graph is fabulous. The first one, actually, if you go back to the one that shows for Oro Valley. I'm not sure of how much the general public is aware of how much the water utility has decreased groundwater pumping. Because if you listen to people in the community and if you listen to social media, there's a lot of grumblers out there. I think, I mean, you guys have done an amazing job with reducing groundwater use, bringing in alternative water resources. I think this grass should be publicized and sent out and mailed out so that people in the community are aware of the good things that you guys are doing in terms of bringing in alternative sources and conservation.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Yes, you know, we every year you'll see this graph in my spring quarterly newsletter, Behind the Meter. You'll see it in our, when we do our annual report. I bring this before council quarterly in our executive report. You know, so this this really, really the body of work we do culminates to like this graph here. And I've told this commission body before and others that we're standing on the shoulders of the giants. Like, and that's why I give acknowledgement to the work that like Alan did, Commissioner Forrest did. He was this utility's second water utility director, you know, almost 20 years ago, and the work he did helped secure the resources that we now have. So we are not solely reliant on groundwater. So, you know, it's just our turn to carry the ball that yard forward, and our plan is when we hand it off to our successors, we set them up for success so they can carry the ball the next yard forward. But thank you for that acknowledgement. And we do put this out there as often as we can.
I know it gets out there to mayor and council and the director's report and all that. I would just love to see it disseminated more widely within the community.
Maybe get a billboard. Can we have billboards?
Exactly. That would be a gorgeous graph on a billboard, yes. Yeah. But just even if it's just in the form of mailings to the general community. I don't think you guys are doing such a good job, and it's going unrecognized in a portion of the community. And I'd love to see it get more recognition.
We appreciate that comment, and we'll explore other ways of getting this out there. Thank you.
Hey, Peter, do you think maybe you could overlay the number of meters, the number of meter connections, like on a different,
because
that would really show the story of,
you know,
of
Commissioner Merrick, yes, and I hadn't forgotten you had, I think you had mentioned that during maybe one of our finance subcommittee meetings, and yeah, definitely, because that even exaggerates the story, right? And maybe even overlay, you know, or population. You know, population's going off the chart. Yeah. No, great. Yeah, we will. Thank you.
I'd like to make one comment, and I thank you, Commissioner Olson, for acknowledging the water utilities work. I actually used this graph a couple of times at our HOA meetings, just because you've turned me into an evangelist. And I report your great work to at least our people.
Well, hopefully you'll still be evangelizing after my next presentation. Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Wonderful comments, and thanks to our senior management team for making that possible.
All right. Thank you, Peter. You can go ahead and stay up there, it looks like. Item number 9, discussion on possible action on proposed water rates.
All right. Well, here we are again. It's that time of year again. As this commission body's heard me say before, you know, code requires us to do a water rates analysis every year. Part of that analysis is we do a 5-year pro forma on what we think water rates are going to look like next year and the subsequent 4 years after that. When we go to the council body, though, they only approve 1 year, but we do this body of work every year. So what are our water rates analysis goals? Develop water rates that generate sufficient revenue to, 1, meet the revenue and cash reserve requirements, meet the debt service coverage requirements, ensure revenue stability, maintain the overall financial health of the utility. The water rates, what should they do? They should also promote water conservation, be the minimum necessary to avoid rate shock, adapt to changing rate drivers and consumer trends, and be equitable between customer classifications and recover the cost of service for both potable and reclaimed water. One of the things I'd like to remind the commission body is the water utility is an enterprise fund. All of the work we do, I mean, everything from personnel to the nuts and bolts is funded by the rates and fees we collect
from our customers. We do not receive money from the general fund, but we do pay the general fund an administrative fee for the services like human resources, legal, procurement, HR, those sorts of things. So our assumptions, we work hard to be consistent with the general fund assumptions. One of the things is it's a little difficult is, you know, the general fund right now is in the early stages of the budget setting process, and we do our body work so much sooner. Like my hope and expectation is after tonight we will have a proposed rate change that we're going to take before council. But the town still has their budget process that it has to go through. So we make assumptions early on that we hope are consistent with the general fund. And of course we work with our colleagues in administration, but you know, things could change a little bit from what I'm telling you tonight to what the town's budget looks like. So for example, for personnel costs, we're projecting a 3% annual increase in personnel costs during the 5-year projection period. Inflation rates, we're projecting a 3% annual during the 5-year projection period. Here again, when the town does their budget, you know, we could, maybe they'll say it's 3.5, 3.3, 2.8. But, you know, we work with our colleagues to have the best assumptions possible that are hopefully consistent with the general fund assumptions. Our single-family growth rates, we project an additional 762 single-family residences during the 5-year projection period. Here again, we work with our colleagues in planning, looking at what kind of developments are coming down the line, what are the time frames, how many units, those sorts of things. interest income, interest rates are projected at 3% annually during the 5-year projection period. Assumptions specific to the water utility, personnel costs, we're not planning on any new employees during the 5-year projection period. Goes towards my comment I had with Commissioner Vesio is we're always have one or two vacancies. We're always looking at, do we have the right people in the right places doing the right things? And this staff is just is excellent with, you know, not is making everybody accountable, doing what they need to do so we can keep our employee costs down. Also, I think all of us would admit that anybody's ever supervised people, the work part of my job is wonderful and a pleasure, and the hardest part of it's the people part. So maybe there's a little self-serving there, less people, less problems, but we have a good staff right now. increasing CAP water delivery and wheeling costs. You know, every year, our intergovernmental agreement with Tucson Water, every year that IGA, you know, allows them to do an analysis on what is their capital costs or what are their capital reinvestments they need to do to their system to provide the wheeling capability to Oro Valley. So, you know, those costs typically go up every year. So, you know, we think our wheeling costs are going to increase, you know, between 5% and 6%. Over the 5-year projection period. And that's, we just mostly look at historical trends on that when we come up with that percentage. And of course, we do talk to our colleagues. I talked to the water utility director of Tucson Water at, last month at CRUA, and you know, he felt we'd be in the same hunt as far as that increasing cost. Another thing is, even though the reservoir levels have improved at Lake Mead, we're currently in a tier. Well, no, I guess we're currently in a tier one shortage. We were in a tier two shortage, and we're going to be going to a tier one shortage, meaning the reservoir levels have come up. In the past, that typically meant that costs would go down. But even though we're going to be in a tier one shortage, we're going to be charged a tier three rate. And we've carried that over the 5-year projection period. The reason being is, you know, there's two main reasons, as I understand it. One is, you know, they're still selling less water to fewer customers, yet they still have the same infrastructure to operate and maintain. And while their power costs might be a little bit less, you know, I think the fixed cost to own, operate, and maintain what they do have offset those slight savings due to less pumping. Another thing is there's been so much a monetary incentive being given to customers to not take their full allocation that that's helping drive the costs up. Just so this commission body knows, you know, I haven't been interested in receiving cash in lieu of taking our full allocation. I don't feel we're as firmed as I would like us to be with respect to how much water we have stored and where we have it stored. So even though there's being offered cash incentives to not take your full allocation, we've been taking our full allocation every year. Groundwater preservation fee, we're planning on, or there's a need to increase our groundwater preservation fee to help cover alternative water supply projects. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that, specifically our Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System project. Our groundwater preservation fee fund balance isn't as robust as I would like it to be based on the increasing costs that we're seeing. So we see a need to increase that GPF to offset how much water, how much money we would need to borrow to cover or to keep that fund whole. Also, existing system capital projects. We're cash funding capital projects over the 5-year projection period, so we're not planning to borrow any money to reinvest in our existing capital infrastructure. I think we have a pretty good a CIP program. I don't think anybody's here in this commission body. 7 years ago, I think we borrowed $5.8 million that we bond funded, that we put into our existing capital infrastructure right away. I felt we were a little bit behind on where I wanted us to be in our capital reinvestments, so we put that money to good use, and I think that helped us catch up such that now typically we're maybe $1 million, $1.2, $1.3 million a year of capital reinvestments, and we feel confident that we can hold that level of reinvestments over the 5-year period. So we're not planning to borrow any money on our existing system improvements. We are proposing, and I'll show you this in the performas, Water Infrastructure Financing Authority loaned to fund the Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System projects. Before I move in, I got one more easy slide. Yeah, one more easy one. So the brass tacks, the recommendation on water rates for next fiscal year, an increase to the potable base rates, an increase to the potable commodity rates, tiers 1 through 4, commercial master metered multifamily, no change to the construction commodity rate, and an increase to the groundwater preservation fee. Reclaim rates, we saw no need to change the reclaim base rates, no change to the reclaim commodity rate, and no change to the reclaim groundwater preservation fees. And that's because a majority of the cost increases we're seeing don't translate to the reclaim system. It's pretty much just the potable system. Okay. And at any time I go through this, as you look through this, please feel free to ask any questions. I'm just going to hit some high-level stuff here. So first of all, we're going to look at our revenues. Yes?
Just real quick, the groundwater preservation fee, I should know this because we set that up when I was here. It was really one of the better things we did. But what does that fund? What does the groundwater preservation fee fund?
You know, it's restricted funding that can only be used for those projects that really preserve and protect our groundwater. So, for example, next year we're going to do a capital rehabilitation project for our production facility, our reclaimed booster station. Since that booster station was constructed, I don't think we've ever. Well, maybe we've replaced a pump here or there, but we've never gone through, you know, every pump and every pump can and rehabilitated it. Well, reclaimed water that complies with the intended use of a groundwater preservation fee because reclaimed water preserves groundwater. So, Mary, are we using GPF on that project or operational dollars. GPF? Yeah. So we are using groundwater preservation fees to fund that project. Also, 40% of the Northwest Recharge and Recovery Delivery System project is funded by the groundwater preservation fee. So of that whole project, 60% is funded by impact fees, and 40% is funded by groundwater preservation fee. Let me break that down even further. 60% of that project is being paid by future customers. 40% of that project is being paid for by existing customers. GPF is existing customers that are paying to create that fund balance in the GPF.
Yeah, thank you.
And thanks for setting that up.
Needed to refresh my memory.
No, it's it makes sense because I like having restricted use accounts that are intended for certain types of work. So yeah. Okay, so here we what Mary's shown here is our 23-24 budget in the light blue. We just provide that just for context so you can see how it changes year over year. Now, when you look at 24-25, bear in mind these numbers do include the proposed rate increase. In general, I'm give me a little rope here, Mary, but in general, without a water rate increase, you're probably close to the 23-24 potable water sales. Yeah. So we're looking at, an increase with the rate increase we're proposing, we're looking at our revenues going up from just under 14.7 million to a little over 16.5 million. And I'm not going to read every line item here. I'm going to hit the high points. So water sales, we expect to be around $18 million. We look at other operating revenue. We have our GPF, our groundwater preservation fee. So we're proposing a 10-cent per 1,000-gallon increase on that. So you see a little bump up in revenue there. No changes to the groundwater preservation fee for the reclaimed. We're going to keep that at, was that 47 cents a 1,000 gallons? Yeah, 47 cents a 1,000 gallons. And here you can see where we're planning on needing to borrow $8 million for the groundwater preservation fee. Here again, when I say planning is right now with respect to the partnered piece, we've selected a CMAR contractor, Borderland Construction, and we're at the very early stages. We don't have what we call a GMP, a guaranteed maximum price from them yet. The way the CMAR works is you have your contractor and your engineer, and you work together to come up with a guaranteed maximum price where the contractor says, okay, I can build it for this amount. And you come up with this before you really start the project. We don't know what that number looks like yet. We've based this on what we think is a worst case scenario. I'm hoping we have to borrow less than that. Brian, could you erase my, thank you very much. So that's why you see this huge bump up. I wish I had a smaller thumb. Can I use, nope. Can I change my line thickness, Brian? Oh, I think I can. Yes, I'll take that one. Okay, thank you. So because of this proposed borrowing, that's why you see the GPF balance get so large right there. But then you see it drop down right there because we've spent it, or we're planning to spend it. So that's for, think of that $8 million is for the GPF. That's for existing customers. Then also here, you'll see a $12 million, that's impact fees. We have a pretty healthy impact fee fund balance, but we're expecting to, when the partners piece goes to construction, which we're thinking is going to happen, we have every expectation of it starting in 2024, we're going to start, there's going to be a lot of spending going on. That project's really going to move into full force. So looking at maybe having to borrow up to $12 million or $20 million next fiscal year. here again, these we haven't engaged WIFA yet. We haven't had the need for the funding at this time. It could be that this time next year that I'm saying, well, you know, we don't need it till fiscal year 25-26, but we're expecting we'll need it in 24-25. Every expectation.
Peter?
Yes.
Sorry to bump in, but I thought it might be helpful if you maybe explain the impact fees a little bit. Those on the Finance Committee probably know what that is and how it works, but some of the others may not.
Great. Yeah, definitely. So as I told you, when you look at your current water bill right now, you'll see this groundwater preservation fee, and it's 90 cents for every 1,000 gallons, and that's for this restricted use funding for projects that provide water resource capability to our service area but preserve groundwater. Well, we also have what we call impact fees, and the acronym is RISDIF, Water Resource System Development Impact Fee. What this is for every water meter we sell. So if you buy a new house here or you build a house and you say, I want a 5/8 inch water meter, and you're like, well, a little brass meter about the size of a football, what is that going to cost me, $300? The meter does, but you're going to also pay an impact fee for the cost for us to provide service to that meter in perpetuity. That's, other people might call it a system, you know, development fee or whatever, but it's a fee paid for by not existing customers. It's by future and new customers. For a 5/8 inch meter, it's, what is it, Mary, a little over $7,000? $6,300? Yeah, it's $6,300 for a 5/8 inch meter. And as you go up in meter sizes, you know, it's tens of thousands of dollars if you get into a 2-inch meter. And the reason is because larger meters have a larger impact to the water system. So we've worked this into our calculation. That's why, you know, we're very interested in what the growth component looks like. Now, when we were first started with the NWRDS project, basically like 10 years ago, I mean, our growth was, our connections per year was double and even triple what it is now, but it's really slowed down. So, you know, even a few years ago, I was thinking, wow, we might not have to borrow anything for this. Of course, construction costs were less then as well. So it's a double-edged sword. Construction costs have gone up. Water sales or meter sales every year has gone down. So it's created this need that we think we're going to have to borrow this $12,000. Now, you know, we're hoping and expecting these are worst case scenarios, but only time will tell. So RISDIF, Water Resource Development Impact Fee Fund, future customers, GPF, existing customers. And the whole theme of that is growth was to pay for itself. It wasn't supposed to, for those folks that are here now, it wasn't supposed to cost them money for other folks to come here. That's really what it breaks down to.
Thanks, Peter. That's great.
A great question. Thank you.
When did we actually start impact fees?
Before my time, I think. Did you have when you were here, Alan? Were you starting them then, or in the process of? I want to say like 2000, 2001, but.
Yeah. They started in during my time, but they were just barely. I think we were going through all the challenges and all that, so they may not have actually been
implemented
until about 2005 or something okay. like that.
Okay, and that money it has been, you know, that money it has been spent as we've been going along, because there are projects that we've had to do to support growth. So it hasn't been just collecting since then. I mean, it's been used as it's intended, for its intended use. So that's revenues. And of course, ask questions as we go along here. And if you have the questions at the end, that's fine too. So looking at our operating expenses, you know, here personnel, that should be that 3%. O&M, we show that going down a little bit. Our current fiscal year, we're renewing our designation of assured water supply, working with a consultant on that. It was like a little over, it's been a little over was that $220,000, something like that? Yeah, we had budgeted $250. Also, we're in the process of updating our water rate model. So we had, I think we had, last year we had budgeted, was it $325, Mary? I know, but total between ADWR and that, yeah. So it's gone down a little bit because we're spending $325,000 this year that we're not going to spend next year. Not going to go through every single line item here, but as far as operating expenses go, you know, we're seeing just, you know, a little bit of a increase there based on those assumptions I had mentioned early on in the presentation. Reclaimed operating expenses, you know, it's holding steady. And then let's see. So here, net operating revenue, this big jump you see there, that's because we're proposing to borrow $20 million. And then, of course, in subsequent years, you know, it goes down. One thing that's important, well, it'll be on my next slide. And then it kind of just holds steady, and I'll explain why. Any questions with respect to the expenses? Okay. Sorry, this is okay, maybe, hopefully it's not too hard to read. We try to put a lot of information as efficiently as possible. One thing I wanted to point out here. So here we're breaking. So we look at our debt service. What I want to point out here, I'm going to jump down a little bit to this line right here. You know, so we're proposing my overreaching goal since day one, as I said to myself, self, can we try and keep rates below 5%? And we had done a good job for 7 years, and I'll go into detail on the reasons why, but we couldn't do it this year without really running the risk of not meeting our cash reserve requirements here. But what I want to show that's encouraging is even with borrowing $20 million, as we project out, we have some on years 3, 4, and 5, you know, we have low to projecting low to no rate increases, and I want to point out why. One is our 2015 excise bonds that we refinanced in 2005. That debt service comes out off in 26, 27. So there's $150,000 a year savings. More importantly, our 2017 tax bonds, that's $1.6 million a year plus the $150. We have a lot of debt coming off in 27, 28. I mean, just look at our debt service. It goes from, you know, 2.8 to 1.1. So, that's really good news.
Peter, just a comment, maybe for everybody's edification, but this is really low debt for a utility of this type of utility. I mean, even when I was a director, I think our total debt was 30, 40 million that we were paying on. You know, that was when we put the reclaim system in, and we're still paying off the purchase of the utilities. So this is really low.
So, Peter, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Where's the debt service for the $20 million that's being proposed?
I'm sorry. Say it one more time.
The debt service for the $20
million. That's
right here. Right there.
Right here. Yeah. So this is, yeah. Thank you, Mary. So this is what we're expecting our debt service payment to be. So, you know, if I take the 800 plus 5, you know what, it's so funny, is in this line of work, I can't believe I'm telling you, like, look, it's we're only taking on, you know, $1.3 million of debt service every year, when just the other day I was shopping for eggs at home, and I bought 3 dozen eggs because they were 20 cents cheaper per dozen than they were the week before. It's kind of funny to, you know, this, these different worlds. But I do, Mary will tell you, Mary's the same way. We're all the same way. We look at these numbers, we're like, my God, you know, we understand the cost of doing business, but we do take it very seriously, and we do, you know, it's kind of funny for me to stand here and like, you know, $800,000 plus $500,000, $1.3 million in debt. But look, I'm taking off, you know, $1.8 million in debt. You know, that's the cost of doing business. One of the things is, you know, we are spending a lot of money on the Northwest Recharge Recovery Delivery System, just as we did with the reclaim system. You know, it's funny. I bet you, Alan, when you folks were taking on the reclaim system and you were taking on that debt, your head was just spinning as to how much money you were spending. And here it is, not even 20 years later, and it was a value at twice the price. I have to tell myself that with respect to the work we're doing now, because I look at what we're projecting to spend, and we'll go over it in detail in future meetings. It makes my head spin, but I know we have to do it. It'll take us to town build out and beyond. It firms our resources, gives us access to more water that we've had stored, on and on and on. And it's a lot of money, and it's kept me up at night, but I know my successor will say, thank God they did that. Anyways, just so you know, these numbers, we're not nonchalant about them. Okay, so you can see the additional debt service there. And, of course, you know, that's at 3%. So, you know, we might, looking in the future, the Fed has signaled that rates might be coming down, of course, with a loan, it could be even less than that. So hopefully that 3% is a worst case scenario. Okay, so let's get down to it. What's really important? So what's driving the rate increase? And how do we determine what our rates need to be? At the end of the day, what's really important is we look at what is our required cash reserves. This is town code. How much cash are we required to have on hand versus what are we projecting? So when we were working on this 7.9% number, and thanks to the finance subcommittee, Commissioner Merrick, Commissioner Vesio, and Commissioner Lanto are on that subcommittee, is, you know, if we got below 7.9%, this required cash versus projected cash, it either we weren't meeting it or it got too close for comfort. And this is why you'll notice how we were able to say we don't need rate increases in these future years, because look at my cash required versus, you know, my reserves that I project to have on hand. Debt's coming off. Cash reserves start going up. So that, I just want to show the commission, these are kind of what drives when do we need a rate increase, when don't we, how much do we need, why is it this much, is these are really the drivers on what we're trying to balance out. Now, let's get to the why. I'm going to go back a couple slides here. One is, you know, every year our CAP wheeling costs goes up a little bit. Also, as I had mentioned, this tier 3 rate increase. You know, in any other world, this CAP delivery costs would be going down because we went from a tier 2 to a tier 1, but not in this current world I live in. We're going from a tier 2 rate or cost to a tier 3. So we have a wheeling driver, we have a CAP delivery cost driver, we also have one additional driver that you don't really see it because it's in here, and that's our administrative fee driver. and that's the fee we pay to the general fund. About three years ago, Mary, that they redid the cost allocation model, and it was found that we weren't paying our fair share. So there was a big increase in our admin fee. And here again, and I'm working with our administration on this, is, for example, last year we made an estimate on what our administrative fee was going to be, like, you know, December, January of, say, January of 23. Well, the town's general fund, they didn't do their cost allocation model, you know, until April, May. And it was a couple hundred thousand dollars more than we had projected. So the rate drivers, CAP wheeling, CAP delivery, admin fees, and then also I showed you that slide of our water resource usage. In the second half of 2022, which is the first half of this fiscal year, 22-23, we had a really wet fall, and we had a revenue shortfall of about $800,000. So what's bumping me up over my 5% goal is an admin fee that was a little higher than what I was expecting, CP delivery costs a little higher than what I was expecting, and a wetter year than what I was expecting. And that took us from what I was hoping would be a 4.9% to a 7.9%. Now, so what are we proposing? So for our typical resident, 87% of our customers have a 5/8 inch meter. 87% of our customers would expect to see a $3.65 increase to the water portion of their bill every month. And let's get to some other stuff here. And then I can always go back to those other graphs if we need to. So what I'm going to show you now is just a pretty version of what builds off of everything you just saw. So the recommendation, a base rate increase of a dollar seven per month, and then I have a dollar six here. Is it a dollar six, Mary? Yeah, it's a dollar six. That dollar seven's not right. Okay, one demerit for Mary. Okay, just kidding. Now, let me touch. You know, if I talk about, we have base rate and commodity rate. Now, how do you balance that? Well, that can be a little tricky balance. So it's nice to have some kind of a base rate increase, because that gives you your revenue stability. Whether you sell a gallon of water or not, just by the customer having a meter, you're going to get that base rate revenue. In the past, 8 years ago, I thought we relied too heavily on our commodity rate. And we saw fluctuations in our revenues. And I'm glad we've focused on getting our base rate increased a little bit, because it takes the pain and suffering of what happened last year, takes some of that away. Like I said, we had an $800,000 revenue shortfall. If we had our old model on relying heavily on the commodity rate, I mean, it could have been $1.5 million shortfall. So we try and balance having that revenue stability with having enough money or enough revenue in the commodity portion to incentivize conservation. So here again, we're going to talk about the 5/8 inch meter, because it represents a majority of our customers. We're proposing $1.06 per month base rate increase. And then with respect to the commodity, majority of our customers use 7,000 gallons a month or less. That puts them in a tier one. And the tier one commodity rate, we're proposing to increase 27 cents per 1,000 gallons. Now, one of the things we started doing last year, we're doing it again this year, and I expect to do it again next year, is in the past, the increase, in my opinion, between the tiers, it was too bunched up. If you look at the tier one, two, and three, the slopes weren't that much different from each other. And what I'm really trying to do is really pull tiers 3 and 4 away. So, and you can see it by observation. You know, if you're in tier 1, okay, you're going to pay 27 cents more per 1,000 gallons. If you're in tier 2, 97 cents, tier 3. So, and then you really get punished if you're in tier 4. Yes, Commissioner
Peter,
Forrest.
Yeah, do you know how many, what percentage of your customers even fall in that tier 4? Yeah,
I don't know the exact number. It's not many. A majority, you know, like I said, 87% of our customers are in tier 1. I don't know, Mary, do you know the breakdown? I want to say a tier 4, what, 3 or 4, 2 or 3% maybe? It's low. Majority is tiers 1 and 2. That doesn't affect many customers. And, you know, here again, could you imagine if you were in tier 4? Like, what are you doing? Like, Commissioner Lanto.
Are the tier 4 mostly businesses or the 3 and 4?
Well, see, here again, with businesses, they have a larger meter size, so their ranges are completely different. This, so a tier 1 5/8 inch customer is 0 to 7,000 gallons. You get up to a 4 inch meter, your tier 1 is, you know, 0 to 80,000 gallons. You get a larger range with a larger meter. So no, not necessarily. We have many commercial customers that are, for their meter size, in a tier 1, tier 2. So this is the conservation pricing side of the equation, is having your commodity rate. And then again, we're proposing a GPF increase of $1 per 1,000 gallons. One, build up our GPF fund account, but and also being able to pay that future debt service. So looking at the potable water cost comparisons, like I said, 87% of our customers have a 5-inch meter. They consume 7,000 gallons a month. Now, here again, we nothing about our rates is do we take what our water partners charge. This is just nothing but benchmarking at the end of the day. This is like the last thing we do. And so what we do, we looked at, you know, our current versus proposed, and then we just compare ourselves to our water partners. So, you know, tier one, we're the least expensive by a lot. The next, Tucson Water is $3 more. You know, Marana's $4. I'll have to talk to Joe as to what he's doing over there at Metro. They're like $13. And then here again, this is tier one. This would be tier two. So on and so forth. But here again, for 15,000 gallons, we're the least expensive by a lot. And then here for 25,000, so here we're a little bit more than Metro and Marana. And this is just reflecting really pulling that commodity rate, you know, into a higher fee structure. So I think, you know, for a majority of our customers, in fact, for probably like 98% of our customers, we're still the best value in Southern Arizona. And here again, that's nothing about what we do. We don't. This is just to provide context. And I hope we can say this throughout my whole career. So here again, what I presented to you, if you look at this body of work here, this is actually scenario. Is this scenario D? You know, we did a scenario A, B, C. Worked with the finance subcommittee, and this is, you know, I think we met with the finance subcommittee. We had scenario A, B, and C, and the subcommittee members feel free to speak because I don't even remember what we changed in that. But they had the feedback they had. It was great feedback, and it was because of the subcommittee's feedback that we came up with this scenario D. So you're not looking at like the first round here. It was discussed, And it was great discussion. And the subcommittee had some great comments that we implemented and came up with the final fee structure that we have. Now, we do have, and I'm going to let this commission body know this, is to meet our timetables, we don't have to recommend this to go to council until February. I'm just hoping we can be efficient with our use of time if the commission body likes this rate structure. If we do, I'm going to ask this commission for a recommendation to go to council with this rate structure. So I would be asking for this recommendation today. If that was so, on the March 6th council meeting, we'd have a notice of intent, and that just gets the whole regulatory part of this rolling, where we advertise. It goes into the in the paper, a notice. You know, it's just a public information process. So if council approved the notice of intent, then on the 7th, we'd publish the hearing date on the town's website. That's the minimum 60-day notice. We'd also publish the notice of intent in the newspaper to meet the 20-day notice requirement. And then my expectation is on the 5th, we'd have a public hearing on the water rate increases, and whatever, if town council approved it or whatever version of that they did approve, those new rates become effective 30 days after adoption. Just for your own information, council can approve up to the rate increase or less. They can't approve anything more than that. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. If there are no questions, I'll ask for the sale, and then I'm happy to answer any questions. With that, the Water Utility Commission Finance Subcommittee and your water utility staff respectfully request that the commission body make a recommendation to forward the water rates as presented to the mayor and council for their consideration for approval. With that, I'd be happy to answer any additional questions or anything you might have.
If you guys would suffer one more comment from a freshman, no, now sophomore member of this commission. When we first met with Tom and Kay, maybe you weren't there the first time, Mary and Peter came with a single scenario. And like David would like to exercise vows, we exercise their patience. I'd love to say that. But they actually talked themselves into three or four more scenarios and asked us to meet a second time, which we were happy to do. We were learning a lot. So a lot of work went into consideration of where to set that rate. And they did get down to below the psychological 8% level.
I think, wasn't my psychological level 8?
It was.
I think, weren't we at like 8 point something? And I said, even though it's my favorite number, I can't live with it.
And so the only thing is, I mean, you're giving us a lot of credit for asking a lot of good questions, but your own work didn't meet your own standards of quality and excellence. So you came back and did a lot more work, and so that's adding to your sales pitch.
Thank you, Commissioner Vesio.
Peter, this is just for 1 year, right? You don't do multiple years. I know a lot of municipalities have now gone to approving multiple year increases, you know, thinking that they can kind of balance them out a little better or something that way. But this is just 1 year, correct?
Commissioner Forrest, that's correct. It's just, even though we do the 5-year pro forma, it's just for 1 year. You know, and I think that makes good sense, you know, because I would love to come back to this commission body next year and say, guess what? We didn't need $8 million. We didn't need 12. And because of that, we're going to be less than what we thought we were. So I think it makes sense to do it every year.
I'm with you. Just wanted to clarify, but I never was a big fan of multi-year because things can change so much from year to year.
My concern with that is I think I would be, bear with the imperfect words, I'd be padding my first 1 or 2 years. I'd be scared to death. 3 years in the environment we're in right now is like an eternity. Yeah, no, we're happy to do 1 year at a time, and I think it's a good code policy. You know, one thing I would like to add, this commission body and this town council has been very supportive of the Water Utility Commission, so much so that this was why in 2020 during COVID we were able to say, you know what, we had planned on a rate increase, but we'd gotten the three prior years that we could absorb a zero rate increase. It hurt us a little bit, like it dipped into our cash reserves, but because of that support we've had from this commission body and our council, you know, we were able to do something like that. So I just want to add some perspective that the support has definitely been appreciated, and I'm hoping these outside years we can do something like this. I mean, that's why we put it there, you know.
And Peter, I think you may have said this during your presentation, but I just can't recall. In terms of, you know, the base rate revenues, what is that as a percentage of your overall revenues? Because that's where your rate stability comes in to play.
Well, let me just, unless Mary beats me to the punch, which she's happy to watch me flounder around up here. So give me a second. Well, okay. So my base rate increase is $1.06. My tier one commodity rate is 27 cents per 1,000 gallons. 27 cents times 7, and because I'm going to make it easy on myself and say 8, so that's $2. But subtract 25 cents, so $1.75. So if I look at the ratio, I would say it's 35-40% from a base rate and 60-65% from the commodity rate. I'm just looking at that and this times 7.
Okay. Yeah.
Hey, Mary, thanks for jumping in there.
And I only bring this up because past experience, particularly with Tucson Water, but we had so much of our revenue coming off those higher tiers that this was back in the recession, when we hit the recession and everybody stopped using water to save money, and we were like $16 million, you know, shortfall in our revenues because so much of our rate base had been pushed into those higher tiers. So when I was there, we were working real hard to push that into the base rate so we weren't exposed. And so that's the only reason I ask.
Yeah, it a little over 60% is coming from the commodity, but and Mary could tell you, we do look at the revenue we generate from each of the tiers, and tiers 3 and 4 is not very much. And we that is part of our analysis, is we look at how much revenue does each tier generate for us. So, like, even though these are big numbers, you know, that's just, you know what that's all about? That's this. Let's keep this going like that. That's what it comes down to. You know, over the Christmas holidays or the winter break, I ordered 7 tons of gravel, and it cost me $650. So if I get 7,000 gallons of water, so think about this. We deliver 26 tons of a commodity to your house for $26.18 a ton. Is that right? How did I do that right? Hold on. I got to do this again. I was thinking about that as I was shoveling. Like, water's heavy, right?
So we
deliver 53,000 pounds of water to 87% of our customers every month. I mean, divide that by 2,000. Oops, I did it wrong. Well, anyways, if you had to drink gravel, you'd be so poor. Anyway, it's funny how you start thinking about these things.
Well, thanks for indulging me on that, Peter. I was just kind of thinking back, and I think our goal was to try to get our base rate to cover about 80%. But you can't do it overnight. You have to work. No. And then it's really threading the needle to still keep that conservation incentive, you know, not destroying that, but making your rates more stable. So it's a real balancing act. So I appreciate where you're headed with it. I think that's the right way to go, but you can't do it overnight.
The problem with 80% is I think I'd lose a lot of my conservation component in the pricing, you know, and just because I won't be able to sleep at night. So for $50, we deliver 26 tons of product, whereas I bought 7 tons of product for $650, and I can't eat it. I can't drink it. It looks pretty in my yard, though. Anyways, I mean, that's nothing short of a miracle to me. I'm sorry. That's why I picked this line of work. This is the best line of work. I love being your water utility director in a desert climate.
Well, and just to throw in my 2 cents on that, you know, just based on my experience, and I really do believe that the conservation-oriented rate structures really had a huge impact on bringing use down in all utilities across the board. But I think we've kind of gone beyond that. I think now it's like you said, our customers have a conservation ethic. I think it's ingrained in this whole area, this whole Tucson area. And so I had that same concern when we started moving that way, but we really didn't see any change in usage by moving more, you know, to the base rate.
It begs the question, this when we look at this trend here, you know, as I've tried to explain this, I think it's a combination of intentional and unintentional conservation, right? People being aware, I live in a desert climate, I don't need to have, well, here again, I don't want to have 1,000 square feet of lawn. It's expensive. You know what? So my mother's house, she had 800 square feet of lawn. And she loved her lawn. My father passed away a little over a year ago, so I was mowing her lawn every Saturday and edging it. And she said, what do you think? I hate seeing you work so hard on the lawn, Peter. She says, what do you think about artificial turf? I'm like, artificial turf, ugh. But I got a contractor over there, got a price. It was like $3,000. So I tore out her old lawn, compacted it, put nice concrete curbing. Contractor came, put in this artificial turf. Her yard looks beautiful. It looks like I mowed it and edged it every day. And I didn't. She was spending almost $300 a month because she had to have the winter lawn too, right? You can't just have the summer one. Her water bill is a little over, barely over $100 a month now. It went down $200 a month. In like 15, 16 months, that lawn will have paid for itself. That's what people are doing. And it's funny now, she's like, why didn't we do this 20 years ago? And I'm like, I don't know why. This is great. But these are the kind of things that the epiphanies people are having. And then, of course, you buy a new plumbing fixture, it uses less water than it did, than the old one did. You know, if you ever flushed a toilet from the 60s, it's like a washing machine. I mean, it must use 10 gallons. Of course, now with the new toilets, you have to flush it 2 or 3 times, but, you know.
A little antidote when, or, you know, funny story, I guess. When we went to Mayor and Council and wanted to change the tier structure, we basically said we wanted to eliminate the highest tier.
And I think that at the time had like a $15 per CCF charge or something. I mean, it was astronomical. But we ran through the analysis, and boy, it was like pulling teeth to get that the council to back off on that. But what finally did it was we told them there's nobody in that tier. So you're raising rates on water that you will never sell. So, you know, it's like, so they did adjust them. We went like from 5 to 4 or something in that. But
And we played around with that too in our performas. And to your point, Commissioner Forrest, there's not much happens there. What also should be known is if you're in Tier 1, you're actually paying less than what it costs us to serve you. The Tiers 2, 3, and 4 actually subsidized. If you're in Tier 1, you're being subsidized. Just a little food. Because our cost of recovery is more like a Tier 2. You know, so if you're in Tier 1, the higher tiers are helping pay your water bill. So, do you think we need to meet again, or is this commission body? I mean, how do you? I don't know what. If there was a recommendation I could have to lower the rates, I would give it to you. I don't see where it would be to where. I don't want to cut this any closer. I don't, you know, I'm have $415,000 of buffer between what I think my cash reserves will be versus what's required. I couldn't even begin to tell you where I would reduce the proposed rate increase. But I'm here to serve at your pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Peter, and staff and subcommittee members for doing this. Looks great. Any other further questions or discussions, or if not, entertain a motion.
I will move to submit the rates to council.
Is there a second?
A second.
Do you want to do a roll call vote, or?
Or maybe just general. If there's any nays.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes unanimously.
And again, that. On behalf of your water utilities, not just your senior management team, but all your water utility staff, and we work for you, is thank you for that continued support. I mean, thank you. And we will do our best to keep your confidence and to do what we do. We'll do our best to be the best deal in town. Thank you.
I just have a question for Commissioner Forrest. How much of the director's product are you going to need to wash down all that pizza?
I'm going to have help, but it may take us into Tier 2 to drink enough water.
All right, thank you. Item number 10, Council Communications. Councilmember Bowen is not in attendance tonight, so we'll skip that. Move on to item number 11, Director's Report. Peter.
Thank you very much. I'll make this as quick as I can. I'm sure everybody would rather be at home, but thank you for your time. So upcoming meetings this Wednesday, Town Council regular session right here in Council Chambers at 6 p.m. January 22nd through the 24th, Arizona Growing Water Smart Retreat. The mayor, the vice mayor, myself, Commissioner Vesio and Commissioner Merrick, and some of the planning staff are going to be going to Phoenix for this Water Smart Retreat. I'll provide a report, or maybe the commissioners will provide a report at our next Water Utility Commission meeting on how that went. We're going to go up there with other water service providers and planners and talking about how can we be more water smart. So stay tuned for that. And thank you very much for Commissioner Vesio and Merrick for volunteering to go. Thank you very much. I and your council appreciate that. January 24th, Town Council regular session here, Council Chambers at 6 o'clock. Our next Water Utility Commission meeting, February 12th, 2024. Hopi Room, Maritza? Yeah. Although I kind of liked, did you like sitting at the dais? No. Okay. Moving on. So Upper Colorado Basin snowpack comparisons. So here is the median, which we like to be at or above. And we're right here. Now, I'm kind of curious to see what this will look like next week. Because I think this weather we're experiencing now, I think the whole Upper Basin states is experiencing it too. So stay tuned for next month's commission meeting. Hopefully this kind of went rink. But right now, this isn't where we want to see it. We want to see it above that median line. So maybe we're just getting a slow start to our winter. Looking at the reservoir levels, you know, they're holding steady, but it's that time of year where they're not really being drawn down. Here you can see where we were at this tier two shortage, but we're now above that tier two water surface elevation, and we're in a tier one. Other reservoirs, you know, Lake Powell, 37%, and then these other smaller reservoirs that, I guess aggregately, I think it matters, but, you know, in and of itself, there's not a lot of storage there. We care about Powell, and, of course, we care a lot about Lake Mead. So stay tuned. Hopefully this colder, wetter weather will provide a lot of snow to the upper basin states so we can keep these water surface levels at Lake Mead as high as possible. Colorado River Water Use Association Conference. The theme was Constructing a Resilient Future, Rebuilding from the Ground Up. Let's see, I went, Lee went, Mary went, David was kind enough to stay here and hold down the fort. Thank you, David. Delegates from all seven basin states in this picture here, they were discussing the perspectives on what needs to happen to reduce the demands on the Colorado River to a sustainable level. As you might imagine, there's a lot of talk and no real hints as to which way we're going. You know, when we had, 2021, I think we had a really dry winter and the reservoir levels were plummeting. A lot of headway was being made, but then we had a wet winter, like one or two wet winters, reservoir levels came up and everything kind of slowed down. So I'll keep this commission body informed on what I know when I know it. But right now we haven't, I mean, I think it's clear that, you know, the river is over allocated and it probably needs to be reallocated. All of us that have an allocation of Colorado River water are expecting cuts, but we don't know how much. When we get to that point in the agenda in throughout this 24, I'll tell you what I think it's going to be and what I'm planning for. I am revising our water resource utilization models to reflect lower allocation, and I'm doing that based on different percentages to see just, you know, what our future might look like. So stay tuned for that. The workshop retreat, Growing Water Smart, as I'd mentioned, the retreats this month, 22nd through the 24th, and some of your council members are going as well as staff. So we'll report on that next month. I just want to let the commission body know, one of the things that's very important to the utility is our assured water supply designation. The assured water supply program operates within Arizona's five active management areas. It's designed to sustain the state's economic health by preserving groundwater resources and reporting long-term water supply planning. Typically, the application is renewed every 10 years to ensure the following hold true. The water's physical, and this is just groundwater, groundwater only, physically available, continuously available, legally available, suitable water quality, that the person accessing that groundwater has the financial capability to do that for 10 years or more, consistent with the state's active management plan and consistent with the state's active management goals. Early in 23, we selected Corolla Engineers to assist us with that application process. We had a pre-application meeting with ADWR staff in 2023. We discussed timelines. Our current designation expired in December 31st of 23, which was concerning to me, but we had a pre-application meeting. They said, just as long as you turn in your application to renew your designation before it expires, your current designation remains in effect throughout the renewal process. So with that, took, you know, we didn't have to rush through that. We took our time. It's a 715-page application. It's a lot of, you know, we provided all the historical groundwater pumping we did and status of the aquifer, a lot of work. And I expect it'll probably take the better part of 2024. Alan, you've probably been through this half a dozen times. But I'll report back to this commission when we get our new designation. We expect the designation by mid to late 2024. Any questions? If not, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Any questions? All right, call to the audience. Anyone in the audience? I don't see anyone, but any speaker cards? None. All right, next part, I'll take a motion for adjournment.
Move to adjourn.
I'll second.
Thank you. That's it.